Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
go, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Good evening. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. I am Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour here on MGC Radio. We're here every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Happy to be with you. What a week. Nobody suspected what was going to go on over the weekend with the Todd Akin story, and we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. And hopefully we'll put it to rest, and hopefully we can move on, because I'm kind of tired of hearing about it, and I'm assuming that most people are tired of hearing about it as well. But it's still a big news story, and everything's still kind of up in the air. There's a lot of speculation as to whether or not he's going to stay in the race or get out of it. The last we heard from Todd Akin, he was in it to win it, and I think that's a good move for the grassroots movement. I think that was probably the right decision, although I didn't feel that way at first. We're going to talk about some other things tonight as well. The media has been saturated with the Todd Akin thing for the last several days, and that's about all anybody can think about. But there are other things going on in Missouri, and we are very much anticipating an election here in November. We have a lot of, it's the most probably historic election in the history of the country. So much is at stake here, and there's so many other things riding on getting the right people in office, besides the Senate seat. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on here in our state. We've got a veto session coming up here in Missouri very soon. There was a long list of bills that were vetoed by the governor, and we're going to have Tom Martz from Locke and Smith on, the Locke and Smith Foundation, on to talk to us about some of the bills in the veto session, and also to give us an update on their event that they've got coming up in September, their Locke and Smith Awards. And we have a Patriot group spotlight this evening. Lauren Maloney of Commuter Patriots is going to talk to us about what they're trying to do in Arnold, Missouri, to kind of stir things up and get people fired up for the election and get them engaged and involved and becoming involved in Missouri politics. And we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants here tonight. My usual sidekick, Dave, Mr. Hour of Truth, has got another engagement. He's not with us this evening, so we're just kind of flying solo. We're going to try to take care of all of these issues, as they come up, and see if we can get it done without Dave here to help us along and give us his great opinions. But first, we're going to take a real short break, and then we're going to come back with our Commuter Patriot Spotlight, Commuter Patriots Patriot Group Spotlight. We'll be right back. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
I've got a fever.
for peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Welcome back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to the Culture Vigilante Hour on MGC Radio tonight. We're happy to have you here with us tonight. We're here every Wednesday night. We do have programming 5 nights a week here at Missouri Grassroots Radio. Mondays and Thursdays are usually filled with Dave and the Hour of Truth. Dave likes to talk about the issues and the candidates and put his own personal spin on things, but really kind of get down to the brass tacks of the issues and make sure that that you can find out what's really going on behind the scenes with whatever's going on in Missouri. And Tuesday nights, Von Carriker, part of our Missouri Grassroots Coalition board, was filling in the Tuesday night slots, but she's taking a leave of absence. So we're going to be filling that Tuesday night slot with Missouri Grassroots News. And we'll have different folks on Tuesday nights to give you the news of Missouri from around the state for whatever is happening during the week. And Friday nights is the Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. You know, it's a wrap-up of the week. We have several guests that like to join us on Friday nights, and we like to get everybody's take on whatever has happened during the week. And that's usually one of our most popular nights. We love having the folks on and having people call in and give us their opinions as well. Something I do want to make you all aware of, there are a lot of things going on around the state. A lot of the grassroots organizations from around the state are working really hard to put on events and promote certain things. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we are very happy to help them do that. So if you have an event or an issue that you want to cover, contact us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and tell us what's going on. We'll put your event on our calendar page, and we'll try to help you promote your issues out there. Americans for Prosperity is having an event here in the St. Louis area on Sunday afternoon. They are opening a field office here in the St. Peter's area, 1241 Jungerman Road in St. Peter's. They have several offices around the state, but this field office here in St. Peter's is new, and they want you to come out and help them celebrate the opening. They're going to have barbecue and live music and prizes and activities for the kids. And they've done just a fabulous job of getting information out to the folks about the issues that are going to affect you here in Missouri and across the country. You know, they're very, very active and engaged in repealing Obamacare, and they've got all kinds of ways for people to get active and involved and make a difference, because it's, you know, they can't do it on their own, and this is going to take an effort from the people and the voters. So join up with Americans for Prosperity and help them help you bring your country back to the government that is run by the people. And so 1241 Jungerman Road from 11 to 6 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. Make sure you go out and visit all those folks out there, Alex and Linda at that field office there. Okay, we're often very honored to make the acquaintance of various grassroots groups around Missouri. There are a lot of grassroots groups across the state who have taken up special interest issues and formed coalitions with their neighbors, and they put on events, and they rally, and they spread information. And we are very lucky tonight to have one such group with us. Lauren Maloney is a man in Arnold, Missouri. So it's just southeast of the St. Louis area here. And he has put together an organization of grassroots folks called the Commuter Patriots, and he's here with us tonight to tell us all about what's going on in Arnold, Missouri with the Commuter Patriots. We're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. My name is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour here on Wednesday evening. We're very lucky tonight to have on our Patriot Group spotlight Mr. Lauren Maloney of Commuter Patriots. Thanks for being with us tonight, Lauren. How are you?
Delighted to be with you and your audience. Thank you, Lisa, for the invitation. As you know, here at Missouri Grassroots Radio and on the Culture Vigilante Hour, we're trying to do our very best to identify and promote local patriot groups so people can find a group to get involved with to help the patriot movement along a little bit and to get people in the grassroots more excited about getting involved with their government. Lauren is another perfect example of what a good patriot group does and helps people become informed and involved so that government can be returned to the people. So, Lauren, you and I met a few weeks ago at the K&N Patriots meeting, and the K&N Patriots was our first patriot group spotlight that we had here on Culture Vigilante Hour. You know, it was a self-motivated group of people who just decided they'd had enough, and they got together and, started to demonstrate, and they drew other people in. Tell me a little bit about Commuter Patriots and how and why you were motivated to start this organization.
Sure, Lisa. In the summer of 2009, while Congress was considering the passage of Obamacare, I was watching it on the news media like everybody else was, and of course the vote didn't come till much later, but I mean we had enough information to know that Obamacare was going to be a real disaster, in my opinion, for the American people, and I just couldn't sit on the couch and watch it all happen without protesting. And so, I thought of what are my options here. I got a piece of large piece of poster board and an easel, and I wrote some handwritten notes about what government health care would do to our country, put it on the easel, and went out to a commuter parking lot where I would talk to people as they were coming home from work or departing for work in the morning. And that's pretty much how the events got started. The name Commuter Patriots takes its name from the commuter parking lot I started out on, and that is how we got started. The actual number of conversations I was able to have was fairly small. I soon learned that there's not much traffic in and out of those commuter parking lots, so we moved on to some other things, but that's how it all got started.
Now, are you all? Do you folks host a regular protest area? Do you meet? How do you communicate with your folks?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that because we're a little bit different than I think most patriot groups. Commuter patriots exist largely on the internet. This is how we communicate with one another. We don't really have regular meetings except for volunteers. There's some volunteer duties, and to the extent that people want to get more involved, they can. But basically, we meet on the internet. And I'll tell you how we do that, and it really begins with our email updates. I write political email updates for people who are too busy working and raising a family to follow politics. I don't know if that sounds familiar with you to you or not, but
no, absolutely.
There are an awful lot of people who fit that category. You know, the husband and the wife both work, and they got kids to raise, and on the weekends, somebody's got to cut the grass, do the laundry, this, that, and the other thing, and there's not a lot of time left. And so some time ago, back in early 2010, a very small group, I guess there were five of us, I started writing email updates for those folks so that they wouldn't have to devote the time to try to figure out what was going on here. And from there, it's grown considerably. These email updates are sent out under the subscript, the title script, Lauren's Discussion Group. And that's because that's what we do. When I send out an update, shortly thereafter, whoever wishes to respond to that update can and does. And I have my critics, and I have my the folks that agree with us, and we try to come up with the best plan to go forward. And but these updates are very infrequent because, remember, my audience doesn't have time for this. So it better be important when I send out an email update, and it is. If any of your listeners would like to join us on that email update list, they can go to our website, which is commuterpatriots.com. commuterhead.org. And let me spell that because I can't spell, and I always used to think commuterhead, one M. Anyhow, it's commuter, patriots.org. All together, no hyphens or anything like that. So that's the website. And then once on the website, there's some tabs up the top. One of them says Join Email List. And if you simply click on that, you will be prompted to join the list. That email list is private. The address doesn't go to anybody. I'm the only one who sees it. And since it doesn't involve any real work on your part or on the part of the recipient, it's a very popular website. And I guess we have over 150 plus recipients now, and we're growing all the time.
So this has been growth since 2009, from your first trip to the commuter parking lot to, and as I understand it, you do meet at the corner of Highway 141 and 6167 on Saturdays, is that right?
Yes, it is. There are three things that the commuter patriots do, Lisa. One is the political email updates. The second thing we do is conservative voter guides. About a month before the election, we put together collectively a group of candidates and issues that are to be supported if you are conservative. And that conservative voter guide goes on to that same website, commuterpatriots.org. And there's a printable, there's a print tab up there so that anybody who wants to print out a copy of it can. And again, this is a conservative voter guide, which is for people who want to vote conservative, but they don't have the time to follow the candidates or the issues. Now, we do print out a large number of the conservative voter guides. They fit on 8.5 by 11 paper, and then a group of commuter patriots volunteers also go out at various intersections and hand out these conservative voter guides. Now, the guides themselves are in the same order that the ballot will present them, so that many of the commuter patriots folks take that with them to the polls because it's all in the same order and they can simply run up and down, and it saves them a lot of time. The third and final thing that the commuter patriots do is what you alluded to earlier. I'll call it the Arnold rallies. And I must start out by saying that I was inspired to do these rallies by Sandy Gerber of the KNN Patriots, and I cannot thank her enough for showing us the way. And our rallies occur every Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. They are at Highway 141 and 6167, also known as Jeffco Boulevard, right in downtown Arnold and directly across the street from Chick-fil-A.
Excellent.
Major intersection. And we're there every day. Every Saturday. Now, while we're there, we have what we call the Toot Project. And the Toot Project is nothing more than a couple of large signs. They're about 2 foot by 4 foot. And on that, we have it printed, Toot if you've had enough of Obama.
What's the response that you're getting there?
Lisa, it's incredible. And I would encourage anyone in your audience who would like to try that and wants to have some real fun, go put that on a sign and stand up in a busy intersection somewhere. Of course, you have to be safe and you can't obstruct traffic. That's not what I'm talking about. But the response is awesome. And it is very, very encouraging to me personally and to all the commuter patriots. Because, you know, what we really do here is we instigate the horn blowing by sticking the sign up. But after that, what you have there is pure neighbor-to-neighbor speech. They are saying, I've had it with this man. And the guy in the next car hears it, and so does the guy in the next car. And it really becomes a little bit of a chain reaction. It's really, really something. And, you know, when you're in a car in an intersection where somebody's got a sign like that and you see it, you know, if you're Toot, what you're saying is, you know, I didn't vote for Obama and I'm right. Or you're saying, maybe I voted for Obama, but it's okay to vote against him. And a lot of my neighbors as well. I can hear that. So we really have a great time. If you want to have a ball, and we do every Saturday, try that, and I think you'll love it.
Well, that sounds like it might be more accurate than any of the polling data that's coming out from any of the pollsters, from what I understand.
I got to tell you the truth, Lisa. This is the kind of stuff that if you were a politician, you'd love to buy. But you know what? You can't buy that. That's because it takes patriots, like the KNN folks or like the commuter patriots, or you, Lisa, and what you do, to really deliver that message and get the neighbors talking to one another. And it's very rewarding.
Absolutely. Well, you're providing a great service with your feedback on your website, and I would encourage everybody to go to commuterpatriots.org, take a look at those that data that Lauren has put together for voter guides, and join them on the corner of Jeffco Boulevard and 141 on Saturday from 12 to noon. And we look forward to hearing more about your progress there, Lauren. We really appreciate everything that you're doing to help advance the Patriot movement in the St. Louis area. So, folks, please go to commuterpatriots.org and join Lauren and his crowd there on Saturdays from 12 to 2 at Jeffco and 141. Thanks for being with us today, Lauren. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa. I am delighted with your help.
Thanks. And we hope to talk to you again soon. Please keep in touch.
We will.
Okay, great.
Well, folks, please do get in touch with Commuter Patriots. They're doing great work down there. And talk to Lauren and tell them Missouri Grassroots Coalition sent you down there. We'll be right back in 1 minute with Peter Kinder to give us an update on the Prop E status of the ballot language.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour here on our weekly Wednesday evening program with MGC Radio. We're fortunate enough to have with us tonight Peter Kinder off the campaign trail. He's taken a few minutes here to drop in and give us an update. Peter filed a lawsuit with the Supreme Court to stop this very egregious ballot language for Prop E that Robin Carnahan wrote to confuse the voters in November. Thanks for being with us, Lieutenant Governor. It's good to have you.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for having me back on, and we have recent success to talk about.
Well, good. Let's start off. Let's just in case people aren't aware, we've been hitting this issue very hard for the last several weeks, but just in case people aren't aware, give us a little background on what happened here with this ballot language.
Well, what we had was a bill passed by the legislature concerning the healthcare exchanges. The healthcare exchanges are called for, that is mandated supposedly to the states to be constructed and set up under the Obamacare law. We have discovered that if you just at the state level, if the states simply just say no, just refuse to set up the Obamacare healthcare exchanges, you have largely disabled the implementation of Obamacare in your state.
Now, isn't it mandatory for us to have under
well,
under
it is
the...
supposedly mandatory, but there is no penalty for not doing it other than the law says, the law says the feds will come in and set up the exchange themselves. Now, there's a lot of reason to doubt that that's true, that they will, in fact, do their own exchange because they're running out of money, and our conservative majority in the House of Representatives in Washington, in my opinion, can and should just defund the funding for these exchanges, and we can shut most of Obamacare down. So the legislature passed Senate Bill 464, which said that we will not set up an exchange in Missouri until there has been a vote of the people or a vote of the legislature to do so, specifically authorizing. You see, in the fall of 2011, Lisa, last September, we caught Governor Nixon trying to set up this very exchange through an unelected board, and we stopped him cold.
Right.
So we wanted, drawing on that experience that the governor was trying to sneak this through, we undertook to make sure that you had to have a vote of the people or a vote of the legislature, House and Senate, before we set up an exchange. So that's what this bill says.
And it's important for people to know that we do want to, it's an accountability issue. We want the legislature,
absolutely,
if we have to have health care exchanges at all, which we really don't, but if we want some accountability, and making the legislature accountable for allotting those funds is a way to get that.
Absolutely. And so the ballot measure gets put on the November ballot. And at that point, the Secretary of State, who sadly is in liberal Democratic hands, Robin Carnahan, she undertakes to write the ballot language. And the ballot language that she wrote is the most outrageously biased and loaded language I've ever seen. What she came up with was language that said this: shall Missouri law be amended to deny individuals, families, and small businesses the opportunity to access affordable health care through health care exchanges set up under the federal health care law.
Right.
Very loaded language with the active verb deny, to deny. I mean, it's biased. It's designed to produce a no vote. It is not neutral language that is accurate and fair and balanced. It is very biased language. And it, in my opinion, it does not even come close to passing the laugh test. And so we filed suit in court the week after the 4th of July to overturn this ballot language. We finally got in front of a Cole County judge in Jefferson City last Friday. And yesterday, Lisa, he granted our request for a temporary restraining order against the Secretary of State, restraining her until the hearing next week on the merits from going forward with that ballot language. It was a huge victory in the first skirmish in this battle.
That's wonderful. We've bought some time. So what do we hope to achieve next week?
Okay, so what we hope to achieve next week is for him to strike down the ballot language I just read that is so biased and so outrageous, and to replace it with neutral, that is fair and impartial ballot language that if it gets on our ballot, and I think it will, I think we can succeed in this, the voters will pass that measure and say we're not going to have a health care exchange in Missouri until the legislature votes it or the people vote it.
And who will write that ballot language if we're successful?
Well, the judge would write it, or possibly the Missouri Supreme Court if it goes up to the Supreme Court.
And this is
going to happen in a matter of a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And do you or the legislature or any of the outside entities have any influence in crafting any of that language, or is it just up to the court?
As plaintiffs in the lawsuit, Lisa, we were required to suggest language, and we suggested neutral language. I don't have it in front of me as I speak to you right now, but we suggested accurate language that accurately describes what the ballot measure does, which, you know, Secretary Carnahan's language didn't even come close.
Okay, so we've been successful, we've bought a little time, we've got a restraining order in place, and next week you argue it in front of the Missouri Supreme Court?
The same judge.
Okay.
Same judge who just gave us this temporary restraining order. Lawyers call that TRO.
Right.
And that is next Tuesday, the 28th.
Okay. And I'm trying to map out a timeline here. So if you're successful, okay, in your efforts next week, the judge will make a decision by about what time, do you think? How long will that take?
He would take a few days to rule, I believe. It's possible that we would have a ruling by the 31st of August, a week from Friday.
And if we're
not
successful.
If not by then right after Labor Day. And whoever loses in front of him can easily appeal to the Supreme Court, and it goes straight down High Street to the Supreme Court, and we get a ruling there.
Okay. So you are anticipating an appeal to the Supreme Court regardless of how this ruling goes, either by you or them.
It's likely to, yes.
And how long will that take?
Well, they have to do it in a matter of weeks, Lisa. It would be boom, boom, boom. It would be very fast.
Okay.
Because they have to print the ballots not too far into September in order to ship them out to military personnel overseas so that absentee balloting can begin.
So it's very reasonable to expect that we would have some definitive answer one way or another before September's end.
Right.
Okay. Great news.
Okay.
We appreciate the update, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
And we hope that you'll come back and keep us posted on the developments that go on in court next week and beyond.
Thank you much.
All right. Have
Bye-bye.
A great day, and good luck on the campaign trail.
You too. Thank you.
Okay. That was Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder talking to us about the Prop E ballot language. We've been hot on the
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
And we're back. Missouri Grassroots Radio, Culture Vigilante Hour. This is Lisa Payne Nager. We've had a packed hour so far. We've got a few more things to cover. We're going to get to Tom Martz in just a minute. Let's touch on this Todd Akin issue so that hopefully we can touch on it tonight. And hopefully by this time next week, Todd Akin will be well into his campaign, raising money, and getting great support from the grassroots. Because I will tell you, I mean, we discussed this at length last night. I was on with Dave while we were filling in for Von Karaker on Tuesday. And, you know, we've been doing nothing but discuss this issue. And I will tell you, I said last night, I was very offended over the weekend at the comments that came from Todd Akin. And I was angry. And I spent 2 or 3 days banging my head against the desk, just not really being able to understand what the heck was going on here, you know, and wondering how in the heck we were going to recover from such a huge foible coming from Todd Akin. You know, it was my opinion that he, out of the three candidates for Senate in the primary, he was the best one to have run up against Claire McCaskill, because Claire McCaskill is a master at campaigning. She's very slick and she's very shrewd, and she's a very polished campaigner and politician. And I knew that we were going to need somebody who had some skill to be able to debate her, you know, and who was quick on their feet and who could speak well in public. And I thought that Todd Akin, out of the three candidates, was that person. And then all of a sudden, you know, he goes on with Charles Jayco on Sunday morning here in St. Louis and just totally lets loose with the most incredible statement I have heard in a long time. And I think most people felt that way. And, you know, the grassroots folks, we've all kind of been, you know, shaking our head and trying to figure out where we're going to go from here. with that information. And the reality is, you know, after I had some time to take a look at it, I mean, I was really upset with it, and I was ready to have him step down. I thought that was the right thing to do, because it's so important for us to win this seat in November. We've got to get Claire out of office, and we had such a good shot going into last weekend. I mean, Todd Akin was 10 points ahead in the polls, and you know, people were pretty charged, and it's pretty much a referendum race. It's not necessarily, you know, people voting for the Republican candidate. It's voting Claire out. I think that's pretty much the consensus. People have been just fed up with her alignment with the president and her alignment with supporting Obamacare and the way she flip-flops on issues, and people are done with her. But she's still a very good campaigner, and we do need somebody to really be able to stand up against her, who's quick on their feet and who presents well as a campaign candidate. Well, so Todd Akin said what he said, you know, and it was supposed to be, kind of a referendum on what he thought and what he felt about the issues, and people were just up in arms over it, and I was up in arms over it for a while. After I had some time to cool off, you know, I kind of decided, you know, this is not about, the campaign issues are not about abortion. They're not about rape. The campaign issues are about Obamacare. The campaign issues are about smaller government. The campaign issues are about everything that Claire has done to, you know, not do the right thing for the people of Missouri. And it really wasn't about what Todd Akin had said. So I was going to still support him, but I wasn't happy. And then I started to see what was going on in the media. And I started to see what was coming in from the establishment Republicans, and the warning sirens started to go off in my head. And I really didn't, you know, it was just, something was just not right. Todd, you know, within a matter of just hours, there was a organized assault against Todd Akin from very strong establishment Republicans. And there was a newspaper article in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Roy Blunt and John Ashcroft and Jack Danforth and others, you know, all mounted this united front, and they made a public statement about how Todd Akin should step down from the race, and they, you know, they want to appoint someone else to take over, and of course they do, because they're establishment Republicans. Todd Akin has got a very good record of voting on conservative issues, and he's, you know, has not necessarily been the establishment Republican puppet like a lot of people in Washington, D.C. have. He's been kind of a renegade on some issues. There's some things that I haven't always agreed with how he's voted on, of course, but generally speaking, you know, he's not under the thumb of the Republican leadership there. So I'm very sure that the Republican leadership would be all too happy to have Todd Akin step down so that they could appoint one of their own to go to Washington, D.C., and to maintain that establishment Republican stronghold there. And that's the way the race started to frame up for me. And, you know, lo and behold, I wasn't the only one who started to think that. I was listening to the pundits on TV. I mean, Glenn Beck threw him under the bus yesterday or day before yesterday, and I understand he's since walked those statements back, and he's started to see those kinds of things frame up as well. And a lot of the Tea Party folks here in my area are having the same discussion. You know, while you're seeing people like, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all of the Fox News folks are all just bashing Akin. You know, I think Chris Christie came out with a statement. You know, they're just all over the place with, you know, bashing Todd Akin. And to me, that was just such a red flag that it just didn't make any sense to me that would be reasonable. It was just too much a red flag. There's another agenda there, and it just changed my mind completely about how I looked at this race. And then I started to think of all of the gaffes that have been made in this campaign by other politicians in other races. You know, I mean, what Todd Akin said was, you know, profoundly stupid, and he admits that himself. But it was no more profoundly stupid than anything that's come out of Joe Biden's mouth. It was no more profoundly stupid than Obama telling you that you didn't make your own success and you build your own business. You know, and it doesn't have anything to do with the issues at hand in the race. So it's time I think, you know, to put on your big girl pants and your big boy pants and get your knickers out of a twist and start looking at what the issue is and weigh what Todd Akin said against what is the real issue in this race. Do we want to defeat Claire McCaskill and repeal Obamacare, or do we want to worry about, you know, offhanded and wrong comments about rape and abortion, which are not issues in this election? So keeping perspective is just crucial for the grassroots. And I think what's the most important message is of all in this entire situation is that the grassroots needs to stop and realize that this race is a grassroots issue. This is about the Republican establishment maintaining their stronghold and trying to bump out a grassroots candidate. Todd Akin is more of a grassroots candidate than anybody they would have appointed to be in that slot. And grassroots folks, while he may not be perfect, need to understand that in Todd Akin, there's a much better chance of you getting what you want from a politician than you would if you allow the mainstream establishment Republicans to maintain their foothold and maintain their control. What we as grassroots movements are trying to do is to try to chip away at those establishment Republicans and get them out of office as much as we can. We've made a lot of strides in the last few years as a Tea Party movement, and by putting Tea Party candidates in office, and it has helped us to make some changes. You got to maintain and keep your focus and not get diverted. Don't let the Democrats or the establishment Republicans take you off your message and take you off your mission. Maintain what the real issues are and get behind Todd Akin and help him win this election. The hard thing to do, I think, is going to be able to get that message out to independents. Grassroots folks are very engaged, and I think it'll be very easy for us to talk amongst ourselves and maintain that support and get our feet back on the ground. But we are going to have to be not only fighting the establishment Republicans, but the establishment media, even the conservative, so-called conservative media, is behind the establishment Republican. And the grassroots movement has to be able to fight that if they want to win this race. So hopefully that's it for the Todd Akin issue. Hopefully we can move on to other things. Hopefully by this time next week, Todd Akin will be off and running and he'll be able to maintain his fundraising efforts. Another thing to think about as well is, you know, the establishment Republicans have pulled all their fundraising from Todd Akin in order to try to pressure him to get out of the race. Now, myself, as a conservative, as a grassroots movement person, I'm going to have to think about and make sure that I don't direct my anger in the wrong place. I think Todd Akin is doing the right thing. I think for him to pull out of the race at this time and for them to appoint somebody else and them to get organized to be able to beat Claire McCaskill in 72 days is an unrealistic expectation, even with a lot of money. I think Todd Akin, even with all of his faults, he's organized and he's got his people in place. All he really needs is the support of the folks and the establishment. And if the establishment pulls their support from him and we lose that spot, we lose to Claire McCaskill, I'm not going to be blaming Todd Akin for that loss. I'm going to be blaming the establishment Republicans for throwing us under the bus and not doing what was right. If they get behind Todd Akin, we can win this race. So if you have the opportunity this week, write your congressmen, write your senators, and let them know that we're done with this mess. We're done with this little game. It's time to move on. Todd Akin is in the race, and we expect the support as conservatives of the people that we put in office to get behind so that we can take Claire McCaskill out of office. Enough said on that. We are fortunate enough with us tonight to have Tom Martz of the Locke & Smith Foundation with us. We're going to talk about the veto session coming up here in just a few weeks. September 12th, I think, is when the veto session starts. And the governor was presented the legislature with a long list of bills that he vetoed over the last several weeks. And Tom Martz is here to talk about it with us. Hi, Tom. Thanks for being with us.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. A little fired up. How are you?
Well, I'm quite well. The sun went down. It's starting to cool off. I think it's going to be a great evening to get a good night's sleep.
Well, there you go. Open window sleeping kind of evening?
Absolutely, 100%.
Oh, very good. It must be cooler down there than it is up here in St. Louis.
It dropped big time when the sun went down. So.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Plus, we don't have all those. We don't have all the asphalt, brick, and block and stuff that you guys have up there.
Yeah, that's true. We have that heat effect thing going on. Okay, Tom. You and I kind of talked earlier in the week. We kind of just picked out a few bills. There was a very long list of vetoed legislation this year. The governor sent back to the legislature. First of all, let's kind of talk about what a veto session is and how it works for people that don't really know or who haven't paid a whole lot of attention to it in the past.
Well, can I kind of change your position here? How about let's talk about what a veto is?
Okay.
I did quite a bit of research in the past couple days to try to figure out what it is that the governor has to use as his basis for vetoing a piece of legislation. But what I have discovered is he doesn't need any. His veto is just like a vote to a legislator. If he doesn't like a piece of legislation that rolls on his desk, his veto is no. And then he sends it back to the legislature, even though, you know, they passed it in the House and they passed it in the Senate, he can send it back to them, in which case then it goes to the veto session, which is where our state legislature, both the House and the Senate, can get together to try to find out if they can muster a two-thirds majority vote on any piece of legislation to override the governor's veto, to force his hand and to force it to become law without his signature, so they can override him. But I was quite amazed to find that the governor doesn't need any basis for rejecting a piece of legislation. It's quite similar to saying, no, I don't want this, and
because I said so.
That's why.
There you go. Those horrible words that we all dreaded when we were kids, because I said so. Okay.
That's right.
Executive order. The executive level, you know, they can do that if they want. Okay, so
absolutely.
So they go back to the legislature. So the governor sends all of these bills back to the legislature. They try to override it with a two-thirds vote. Let's talk about some of these bills that we've got going. What's up first?
Let's do Senate Bill 749, since that's the only Senate bill that we looked at. Now, Senate Bill 749 is. This one is basically a difficult piece of legislation. Now, the Lockett Smith Legislative Committee ruled this a good piece of legislation simply because we saw it as a basis to limit the overreach of government. If you put something into law where it says government cannot do this, then somewhere down along the line, somebody's going to have to write another piece of legislation restricting all that and saying government now has the right to do this. This is why we accepted this piece of legislation.
Okay.
Now, the governor, in his veto, said that basically this piece of legislation is not needed because the people have the authority right now, that is the companies, when they buy health insurance, they don't have to have in their policies the essence of contraceptives and things of that nature, which is factually correct. I mean, when you go and buy a policy from either Aetna or United Healthcare, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, you name whichever of the eight health insurance companies that are here in Missouri, and I do believe it's eight, you literally do not have to have within that policy anything which requires your policy to cover contraceptives. Doesn't make a difference whether you are a church, whether you're a welding firm, or whether you're a trucking firm or a warehouse. You can opt out of that type of language from being in your healthcare policy.
Yeah, but right now the power is with the people, right? It's not with the health insurance companies to make that determination, right?
Oh, well, right now it's the power of the people. And it's also the fact that this is one of the few issues that government, the state legislature, hasn't forced, of which, there again, if we implement PPACA, which is Obamacare, that choice goes away.
Okay.
And I believe, and I haven't been able to get anyone's perspective on this, but I would bet there's a lot of people who voted yes on this piece of legislation thinking that if Obamacare was ever implemented, this piece of legislation right here would make it so that that essence, you couldn't hold them to that in the state level.
Right.
Via the 10th Amendment. But you and I both know the 10th Amendment's never used, so we would get steamrolled on it anyway.
Means nothing, right. Okay. So the governor vetoed this bill.
And I would bet this one, I don't think our state legislature is going to try to override this. But they may, simply because they, you know, they can stick a feather in their hat and say, look what we did for you. But I think there are other issues that they're probably going to go for before they go for this one.
And if Obamacare gets overturned, it's moot anyway. It means nothing.
Correct. Correct.
So, this all hinges on Obamacare anyway. The way I read this veto was that, of course, you know, the power lies with the businesses and the people to buy their insurance, whether it covers contraceptions or not. It's up to the folks. The way I understood it, it was that this legislation would put more power into the insurance companies to make that determination on whether or not that was part of the contraceptive package.
Well, right now, insurance companies, you have the option. I mean, they do have policies where contraception is covered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's rider.
And people have the choice to buy it or not.
Correct. The only part of that piece of legislation that I really didn't like, and it's right in the first paragraph, where it says the rights, actually it's in the second paragraph where it says no employee, comma, self-employed person or any other person shall be compelled to obtain coverage for. And one of the hard things I have about this, if you're an employee for, you name the company in Missouri, and that company happens to have contraceptive coverage within their policy, well, by the reading of this, they're allowing an employee to opt out of that. And I would find that very difficult for either the health insurance company or the employer to try to exempt one individual from that type of a deal within that policy.
Yeah, much more paperwork, much more bureaucracy. What a big darn mess. So, but the governor vetoed this. It could all be a moot point. So it really wasn't a bad veto, actually.
Correct. Right. I mean, based on the current protections that we have in the state of Missouri, I think the governor's correct in his assumptions. But anything that the legislature can do to tie the hands of government at this point is beneficial.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Next.
1329 House bill. Now, this one was rejected by the legislative committee, and the governor vetoed this one. And I do believe this is the bill that would allow them to
the out-of-state tax.
Yeah, out-of-state tax. And it's not a sales tax. It's a use tax.
On motor vehicles, boats, trailers, outboard motors, yada, yada.
Correct.
So, and the difference between a sales tax and a use tax is there's a difference. And
use tax is based on being able to use the vehicle, like to pay for roads and that sort of thing. And the sales tax is based on the price of the vehicle that you purchased it.
Okay, so, and what they're saying here is the state of Missouri has the ability to tax you, a sales tax, on a vehicle that you buy out of state. Yes or no?
Correct.
Okay.
But only if it is a sales tax. This
so
was actually doing it.
You'd be paying sales tax in two states, yes?
Yeah. You actually could be.
So you'd be in double taxed here. So it's a new tax for Missourians.
That is very possible, yes.
Okay, that's bad. And the legislature voted to approve this.
The legislature did.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the governor got this one right. I think it's quite interesting. In his veto, he actually used the Commerce Clause as the basis of his veto. Usually the Commerce Clause is the catch-all clause to do anything the government wants to do.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, he actually used the Commerce Clause as the reason to veto this, to say that it was no good, because the Commerce Clause prevents states from discriminating against interstate commerce.
Right. And that makes perfect sense.
Correct. And he vetoed it, and this is one of the vetoes that he ought to be applauded for.
Yeah, that's
He has a D after his last name, but let's give him credit where credit is due.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And bringing in a new tax for Missourians, double taxing them for purchases they make outside would be, you know, discriminatory for people to buy across state lines. So absolutely, that was a good veto. Okay. And the last bill that we have is?
House Bill 1250. This is a beautiful piece of legislation.
Okay, smoking ban in Farmington. Okay, so, all right. You know, we're going to do smoking. We're going to do a show on smoking bans one of these days. They're trying to do that here in St. Charles County again. What is it with the smoking bans? You know, conservatives, what are you thinking?
Well, I think the basis is, and granted, the legislative committee rejected this bill simply because any time that the ballot box is used to force your will on somebody else's property rights, I'm sorry, you don't have the constitutional authority to do that, and neither does government.
Right.
Government has completely overstepped its bounds. Voters have completely overstepped their bounds. And what we found here in Springfield is it was predominantly the church organizations who were behind the smoking ban. And I am a non-smoker. I haven't picked up a cigarette in years. But I don't have the authority to tell the gentleman who owns Applebee's that just because I want to eat in Applebee's that I'm going to demand that you make your establishment non-smoking so I can come in and enjoy my dinner without somebody smoking beside me.
Right. You can vote with your pocketbook and eat somewhere else. You don't need to have government-regulated rules in businesses of any kind, especially smoking bans. Now, I mean, I agree. I'm not a smoker either, and I don't go to smoking establishments. I vote with my pocketbook, and I go places, you know, that I don't have to deal with the cigarette smoke. And a lot of places in my area have voluntarily become smoke-free, and that's what you do.
That's the way it's supposed to be done.
So the governor vetoed this bill on what grounds?
The governor vetoed this bill. Now, this one was a really weirdly written veto letter. I mean, I applauded him for doing the right thing. And his basis for this was the restaurant was not being defined properly. It has an intersectional reference to the definition of restaurants, which cannot be reconciled with any rational understanding of the term smoking. It would deprive the public of any ability to understand the scope of the proposed ordinance. And moreover, it is not permissible to substitute what the legislature might have meant for what it actually said. Accordingly, this error, while perhaps inadvertent, is fatal to the bill. So he's basically telling the legislature that you messed up in the wording of this bill. Therefore, you cannot allow Farmington to go ahead and pass a smoking ban under the auspices of this bill is written incorrectly.
Well, good. I wonder if that'll take place in the other municipalities that are trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, and this bill was specifically etched out. I mean, they went through the process of defining how many people were in the community, what size the county was, what size the city was. They specifically manipulated the ballot language to make sure that Farmington was the only community that could fall under this auspice.
So they're going to have to do it county by county.
Right, and I got to give credit where credit is due. Carl Beard actually was the one who pointed out to us that this language was being specifically niched for Farmington.
Okay. All right, we're running out of time. We're going to have Tom Martz back next week. Maybe we can talk about some more of these issues. And we also kind of want to talk about an issue let's talk about executive orders from Obamacare, and let's get the grassroots motivated to send our newly elected with a list of executive orders to overturn. Thank you, Tom Martz, for being with us. We will be back here next Wednesday evening. Tomorrow night, join Dave on the Hour of Truth, and Friday night, the Roundtable. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Lisa.
Have a good evening.
You
too. God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition.
a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.